welcome back. I also take this opportunity to welcome our guests today who will be briefing us. As the agenda before you stands, we are dealing with the annual report and financial statements for financial year 2009-10 of DINEL, and they will be briefing us. I think we must do introductions, after which we will do the apologies, and then after which we will ask DINEL to explain first to us how best they would like to approach their presentation to us. I'm the chairperson of this committee, Faith Mento. I will ask members, starting from Gloria, to introduce themselves. Thanks.
Okay. I'm Gloria Borman, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Quirnoff, member of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises.
Rose Sonder, member of the committee.
Good morning.
Thank you, sir. Rose Sonder, member of this committee.
Good morning. I'm Jake Dikwawo, member of the committee.
I'm Aubrey Mukwena, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Chris Khololo. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
My name is Peter van Dalen. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
Bonnie van Dijk, member of the committee.
We have my team here. You go ahead.
Tisang Muchimi, the committee secretary.
Eric Boska, the researcher for the portfolio committee.
To DINEL for introduction. I do have your list here, but I think it's proper for you to introduce yourself, your delegation.
Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Talib Sadiq. I'm the group CEO of DINEL.
Good morning. My name is Busiso Sibisi. I'm the chairman of the board of DINEL.
Good morning. My name is Sikile Mhlontlo. I'm the group financial director of DINEL.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Patience Mushunga, responsible for HR and transformation for the group DINEL.
Good morning, my name is John Morris, Head of Strategy at DINEL.
Good morning, I'm Denise Wilson, I manage the Air to Air Missiles Division of DINEL Dynamics.
Good morning, my name is Anthony Kamungoma, Acting Deputy Director General, DPE.
My apologies, we also have in our midst the department, so forgive me, I always do that. I just look at the agenda and DP is not on the agenda and I always forget to acknowledge your presence. My sincerest apologies. Please go ahead and your team may introduce themselves as well. Sorry, DDT.
Good morning. My name is Weekend Bangani from the Department of Public Enterprises.
What do you do there?
I'm a director and doing defense analysis.
So if you are a free rider. Okay. Fence analysis. Derek, thanks.
Morning. I'm Tracy Washer from the Department of Public Enterprises, Chief Director on the financial side of the Manufacturing Business Unit. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Sam Maniwana, Parliamentary Liaison Officer.
No, I'm a visitor from the CSIR. I'm the parliamentary officer from the CSIR and CEO of Dr. Sibisi.
Yeah. To have you in our midst. You're a bonus. Thanks. If everybody introduce themselves. Mr. Kreevachan, why are you hiding there? Please introduce yourself.
Morning. Morning, members of the committee. I'm from DPE. It is Colin Greyhawk. Unfortunately, I have to leave chairperson, so I'm sitting at the back.
Thank you.
We will deal with apologies now.
We've already received two apologies from Mr. Khalilam and Ms. Hajij.
When we send apologies, we normally give reasons for being absent. Could you please do that, sir?
Mr. Khalilam is on a business trip, and Ms. Hajij is on a PAP, the Pan-African Parliament.
Thank you. I think those apologies are perfectly in order and accepted. We will hand over to Dinelle to explain first to us how they will approach their presentation, if there is any way they prefer to do it.
Thank you, Chair. Although my name appears first on the slide, and I hope that everyone has a printout of these, in fact, the Group CEO, Talib Sadiq, to my right here, is going to lead the presentation. And then we'll be grateful for interaction and questions and contributions from your side. The primary message, or incidentally, I've been on the board for quite a while now, and certainly through the period when we first started talking about the turnaround strategy that has been sustained over the years, around about 2005. And the fact that we've come to a point where the core defense and security entities of Danel actually show a profit of 200 million rand is a day I never thought I'd quite see. Now, of course, there's still a significant loss in one area, the Danel sub aerostructures. And I think the core message from the point of view of the finances is exactly that Danel, excluding DSA, has in fact attained the turnaround that was the objective of the turnaround strategy starting in 2005. And so we shall then talk about that in more detail, as well as discuss what the options are with regard to DSA and some other elements within the main group that still require attention. But by find a way, the main challenge is DSA. There are also, of course, considerations of a strategic nature that we will be grateful to receive input on.
May I ask you just to slow down a bit, because our audio system, we might struggle to hear you when we try to listen to you after you have left. So just for the sake of our record, if you may, you can apply a slightly slower pace, please.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be suitably slow for Parliament's purposes. Yeah, thank you.
In our presentation, we would like to cover the following issues as we present our annual report to the committee. We would like to review our strategy implementation progress since we've embarked on the turnaround strategy in 2006. We would look at our human resources achievements, transformation, look at our program management achievements, and we would like to make a specific focus on the A-Data program that we're in partnership with Brazil. A look at business development, the financial performance, and an important issue is the impact of Danel in South Africa. Because as a state-owned enterprise, we believe that when one looks at Danel's performance, one needs to look at it across many angles rather than any one singularly point of view. In terms of our group structure, we have 11 core entities within the group. Of the 11 core entities, we have strategic equity partners in three of those where they own a majority stake, and this is with the Safran Group in Tabameka, Africa, in Carl Zeiss Optronics with the Zeiss Group in Germany, and Rheinmetall Defense owns a 51% stake in Rheinmetall Danel Munitions. On Danel Saab Aerostructures, that's the other company where we have a partnership, and over here we own 80%, and Saab, Swedish-based company, owns 20%. We also have many other supporting businesses, but the two that we would like to highlight is Danel Properties and Danel Technical Academy. We do report to through the Danel Board and eventually to the Ministry of Public Enterprises. An important point that we wish to make on this slide is if you look at our revenue mix on the top right-hand column, from a Danel perspective, If you exclude the associates, 61% of our revenue comes out from the local market, being the military and paramilitary. And if you do include the associates, that percentage drops to 53%. So it talks to this equity partnerships and the outward strategy that we were able to achieve driving our export revenue by concluding these equity partnerships. From an industrial cluster point of view, we operate in four distinct clusters: defense, security, certification and training, and aerostructures. The relevance of this slide, we will talk about it later on, but in essence, we are saying our defense and security businesses and certification and training have turned around. All of them may not be operating at the margins we would like them to operate at, but certainly we've seen good progress. And our aerostructures business, due to the financial losses that we've been sustaining over the years, we have implemented and we are continuing with our turnaround plan in that business. So from a strategy implementation perspective, prior to 2006, this was the financial performance and position of Danel. Our losses had reached about 1.5 billion rand. We had utilized about 500 million rand worth of cash. And an important point is our solvency. We had become insolvent. And as a result of that, we could not sustain ourselves. We then had to embark on a turnaround strategy. So the key issues that caused us to be in this financial position are summarized to you on the following slide. We were a centralized company. We lacked accountability and performance at the underlying entities. We had a subsidy mindset. We were not commercially driven. Our program performance was poor. We had diversified into businesses that were not related to defense and security. And we were impacted by the significant decrease in the domestic defense spend. And we also had an unfocused export approach. We've also suffered from significant global market access constraints. But just to look at the point around the decrease in domestic defense spend, and over here we show you the impact that we had with the defense, that we were affected by with the defense spend. And in essence, what you see on the slide is that the defense industry, although for a long period of time, had operated within a bubble. And the bubble had burst in 94. And when that bubble burst, we did not undertake the structural reforms that we should have done at the time. And as a result of that, in 2005, we found ourselves in an insolvent position. And when one talks about the structural changes, one sees the relevance of it now with the global economic crisis, where you are finding businesses are needing to undergo structural reform in order to be sustainable. So in 2005, we embarked on that exercise. The other point that we want to make is the defense spend analysis of other comparable countries to South Africa. If you look at most of the other countries, they are spending in excess of 2% on defense. And in South Africa, our defense spend as a percentage of GDP is about 1.2%. The figure for China is not entirely accurate because the spend is in other ministries as well. Could be through the Department of Science and Technology, through commerce, etc. But we've taken what was publicly available. But that number is not confirmed. In addition to the challenges on the defense budget, we do know that border protection has now moved in within the defense environment. Also, military veterans has been added to the defense budget. There has been an increase in peacekeeping operations, and personnel costs has been a key driver as well in the defense budget. So all of these are pressures which has had an impact on the defense industry, and as Danel, a leading player in the South African defense industry and reliant on the defense ministry, we were affected. So, in terms of strategy to fix Danel, we stated that we needed to be a sustainable, a commercially driven entity. We had to overhaul our governance. We had to ensure that we're attracting world-class skills because we do generate a significant portion of our revenue outside of South Africa. And even within South Africa, our clients were looking for world-class products. We had to improve our productivity, and we had to partner with state agencies and develop partnerships and alliances with global OEMs in order to access markets. So our pillars that we put together in 2005 were as follows: securing privileged access to the local spend, partner with state agencies to improve our marketing opportunities abroad, to become commercially viable, and to exit businesses that were non-core, to secure equity partnerships where applicable with players that will give us market access, and to raise our capabilities to world-class standards. And the foundation stone at the time was people and transformation. So, moving on to the next page, on your slide, which summarizes the steps that we took since 2007 to 2010, we decentralized Danel into standalone entities. The importance of this is that we positioned Danel as an investment holding company. And the point there is, when one talks about Danel, we are asking all our stakeholders to now look at each standalone entity within the Danel group and look at those industrial clusters. And that's the point I will demonstrate later on in our business, where we will show you the performance that we've managed to achieve. We've implemented governance policies. We've introduced performance management systems based on business performance, strategy implementation, and transformation. We've concluded equity partnerships with businesses that were more export-focused. We've also disposed of non-core businesses. We've implemented a number of transformation initiatives across the group, and we've improved program performance. The summary of that all is quite important. Our defense moved from a loss of 1.3 billion rand in 2006 to a profit of 200 million rand. And our aerostructures business, the loss in 2006 was 300 million rand, and unfortunately it's still around the 300 million rand mark. And hence we are stating that going forward on our defense and security businesses, our focus is on growth, both locally and internationally. And from an aerostructures point of view, we are still embarking on our turnaround plan in that business, and we are seeing a positive movement forward. In terms of the achievements of our equity partners, as I said, we've concluded equity partnerships with these three groups where we own a significant shareholding, but it's controlled by these companies. We've been able to broaden our market access, our client base. We've also been able to upgrade the industrial capability in South Africa. The revenue growth has been a step change in a positive direction over the period of time. And this revenue growth has not only been for the benefit of Danel, it's been for the benefit of South Africa, because these companies have outsourced a significant number of activities to other local industry players. As an example, when we concluded the Rheinmetall equity transaction, one of the local defense companies saw a doubling of their order book within a period of 6 months. Other important issue relates to research and development. We have seen that these companies were able to do self-funding research and development, quite critical for positioning South Africa in a competitive space globally. And then obviously the bottom line was that the net profit margins improved significantly, because all of these businesses were on the verge of closure. You'd look at Turbomeca Africa at the moment, they are generating a sustainable net margin of about 11%, against a 55% deficit margin in 2002. Carl Zeiss Optronics, 17% positive versus 50%, and 8.2% positive versus 3.3% with Rheinmetall. And that was driven principally by improved market access. We were able to design and develop world-class products, but we were not able to access these markets internationally. And with the partnerships that we've established with these companies, and they have a long history in operating in a very competitive environment. So moving on to slide 13, what we've seen is that these equity partners, they've not seen us just being a low-cost advantage, because we believe a low-cost advantage gives you a short-term competitive edge, but they've created centers of excellence in South Africa, where if they were involved in these sort of businesses in wherever they were, their parent company was based, they then looked at outsourcing it to South Africa based on our competitive positioning globally. And they've seen the results of it, and we've also seen it through the improved performance of these businesses. In fact, just to highlight one of the things, which is the new optical manufacturing facility, that was opened up in September 2010. It was for the first time we were able to do this over the past 30 years in our country. And that's due to the relationship with Carl Zeiss.
Okay, in terms of our shareholders' compact, our performance against our shareholders' compact, the strategic role we play in the provision of defense capabilities, over the past year, we are pleased to tell you that as we've improved the performance of our defense and security businesses, no non-core capabilities were discontinued. Or, unfortunately, we haven't established any non-core, unfortunately. We've also managed to maintain all of the capabilities. We've improved access to the local market to 61%. Our program performance to DoD contracts, we've achieved a milestone of 91%. And the international norm is about 85% for development-orientated projects. And this demonstrates the success we've achieved around improved program performance. In terms of R&D, we spent about R1 billion across the group. From a Danal perspective, we spent R835 million, representing 22% of our revenue. There are positive and a negative to that point. The positive is the investment we are making in R&D and the increased value we are creating to intellectual property. The negative side, it talks about our lack of industrialization. We are producing not as many as we should in order to leverage the development costs that we've incurred on particular products. So market access remains a key challenge for us. From a self-funded R&D, we spent almost 1% against a contracted 0.5%. Our debt-to-equity positioning is concerning. We, at the moment, have a debt of about R1.8 billion, and that talks to the debt-to-equity of 2.9 to 1. Our sales margin is, at the end of March, it was 52%, and at this stage, it's about 77%, our order cover. And then we've also improved productivity. The reason why it has come down to the contracted is due to the problems we are having with Danal Saab Aerostructures. And hence, we are still proceeding with our turnaround plan in that business. And from a triple BEE contributor status, we are very pleased to state that we've achieved a level 4 triple BEE status against our target of level 5. So our journey going forward, our growth strategy is going to be focused around business development. We still want to focus on cost cutting, mainly in the areas of supply chain and shared services. We believe our balance sheet needs to be strengthened. We need to look at, we are having discussions as well on funding and recapitalization. The Danal future state, which I will expand to briefly, is quite important in terms of aligning the different stakeholder interests in Danal's future. And then the restructuring of the Danal Saab Aerostructures in addition to King 3 compliance. Our vision is to be the respected South African provider of innovative defense, security, and related technologies. From a Danal future state, this was a project that was established through a cabinet process in December 2007. In June 2008, a cabinet memorandum was tabled, and there has been engagements between public enterprises and the Department of Defense. And this is to balance the stakeholder interest between Danal, the DPE, the Department of Public, Department of Defense, and National Treasury. We've also sought to discuss the key capabilities required by the SANDF and the classification of capabilities that are regarded as sovereign and the funding thereof. In that end state, we also spoke about the equity partnerships, with the principal focus areas being around improving market access, upgrading our industrial base through job creation, and providing the DoD with indigenous world-leading products through these equity partnerships. We've also reviewed the relationship between the Danal Aviation and the Air Force in order to improve efficiencies within these two entities, and then to look at minimum multi-year orders for some of our other businesses in order for them to be sustainable. On Danal Saab Aerostructures, as I did state, in 2006, this company posted a loss of about $300 million, and in 2010, we were almost at the same number. So in 2009, we launched a turnaround plan. The first part of the turnaround plan focused on operational efficiencies, and we're very proud to tell you that we've managed to double through plant throughput. We've also been able to reduce our scrap rates and to industry benchmarks. With the global economic crisis, we have seen a decline in revenue, And going into the next 2 years, we see a 50% reduction in our revenue. So what we've done is we have now prepared a restructuring plan. The focus around it is to see how we can access additional revenue and also to reduce our cost base in order to improve productivity. Our productivity level in this company is about 25 to 30% of the global benchmark. From a global benchmark, we should be operating at a productivity of about R1 million per employee, and in this company, we are operating at about 200,000 to 300,000 rand. And hence, we then announced the retrenchment process during the past couple of months of up to 300 positions will be affected. To position our defense and security businesses for growth, these are the strategic drivers that we've set for ourselves, improving access to sustainable markets, continuing with our task of improving operational excellence, deepening our relationship with state agencies and the defense community, continuing our progress we've made in strengthening governance and financial management, and moving towards a respected South African company. We believe that across all of these pillars, we have made steady progress. And the values that we've set for ourselves, performance, integrity, innovation, caring, and accountability. And we make every effort within the group to live those values. From a human resources perspective, including our associates, our staff complement was about 7,300, and we have a breakdown between our white and ACI employees. And what you see on the next slide, slide 21, our ACI employees make up just around 50%, and we then break it down further between female and male. From a skills development perspective, we have a number of programs within the group, both for Denel employees and future employees for South Africa students or learners. We have a talent management program. We have a system engineer. We do have the breakdown as well, Chair. We just wanted to be... to keep the slides to a smaller number. But our head of HR could talk to you about that as well, Ms. Chair. Okay, we'll do that. Thank you. Sure, one can make that point. But we will be able to give you those details after we break for tea. Thank you. In terms of skills development, as I said, we have a Denel Technical Academy. This used to be known as Denel Center of Learning and Development. We've relaunched the academy as Denel Technical Academy, and currently we have 352 apprentices in training, not only for the Denel Group, but also for companies operating in a similar business to Denel in South Africa. And over the past year, in addition to these apprentices, we provided training courses to about 1,000 students. We have a Youth Foundation program, and this is a bridging program for students that completed a matric but wishes to pursue courses that's related to maths and science at university, and we've had great success in this program. We would like to do this to a much higher learnership, but the challenge is around funding. And then we have a number of pre-employment programs, our schools outreach program focusing on maths and science, our SA Women in Engineering, and our bursaries. Human resources achievements, we have a succession planning framework in place. We have a leadership development competency framework that we've developed. We are hosting in the next few days our annual senior leadership symposium with the focus around business development. And this, the attendees here are the top 100 leaders within the Denel Group, cut across senior staff and junior staff members. We are busy developing our skills development strategy. And overall, what we've seen with the improved performance of the Denel Group, we've seen our employee attrition rate decreasing to about 4.5%. And at the time when we embarked on the turnaround strategy, we were almost at 14% and losing good skills to not only to in South Africa, but outside of South Africa. From a transformation perspective, across all of the Denel companies, we have transformation committees, and these committees are chaired by the CEOs. It includes organized labor participation and employees up to shop floor level. We've completed two climate surveys, and we've seen a steady increase upwards. As I stated earlier on, we've achieved a level 4 triple BEE, and from a BEE spend in 05-06, we were at 18% of our total spend, and now we are 28%. From a program management point of view, on this slide we highlight some of the challenges that you have around program management, specifically around development-orientated projects. With development projects, your margins are normally low, and they do require investment before you attain serial production. And with the international economic decline, we have been affected by overcapacity and growing competition in our traditional markets. And our clients all over the world are experiencing a tightening of the defense spend in light of the austerity measures that are implemented across the world. And these clients are looking at defense industry players carrying more of the program risks. Serial production is where you would produce one or two prototypes and then you need to now produce 100 or 200 of the same number. So our challenge is we are still largely a development-orientated company. In the entities where we've concluded equity partnerships, we've been able to improve our market access and then we've been able to improve our industrialization. So instead of servicing just one or two clients with 10 or 20 units, we will now be supplying 100 or 200 of those particular units. Now, if you look at our missile business, for instance, we produce about 100 missiles a year. Your global competitors would produce about 5,000. So to operate globally in that space, you actually need to improve your level of industrialization. And that's driven by more orders.
So you are low in terms of
serial production. That's right, Chair. From an operational excellence point of view, we've achieved 91.5% of our cash flow on DoD contracts. As I stated, the majority of the orders are of a development nature, and the international benchmark is 85%. We're very pleased to inform you that we've made very good progress on our key programs, being the ADATA development order contract in partnership with Brazil, our Badger, the working name is the Who Faced the New Generation Infantry Combat Vehicle. We've also managed to achieve or complete the certification work required on the Royfog aircraft. We've achieved international accreditations on our DSA special processes and completed our Seeker 2 export contract ahead of schedule. We've also achieved flawless munitions and pyrotechnic deliveries. On the ADATA program, this is in partnership with Brazil. The Brazilian government has jointly funded the development work, and technology transfer has been part of the package, where we have about 30 employees from Brazil, both from the Air Force and from industry, that are resident in South Africa with their families working on this project. And both South Africa and Brazil are benefiting from this world-class technology. Both countries have first-class capability to effectively protect their airspace through this project. I'm going to pause here and ask the head of the ADATA program, who's with us this morning, Denise Wilson, to take you through the next few slides briefly.
Just talking about what the ADATA program does for South Africa, I think what it's proved to us is that it provides us with international credibility in a very highly competitive environment. We only have one or two serious competitors to the ADATA missile in the world, and the world respects our capabilities in South Africa, and I think it's often surprised by those capabilities that we have. It allows us to develop valuable engineering skills and retain them in the industry in South Africa. We employ about 20 bursars a year, and it's encouraging young people to take up engineering subjects in universities. 80% of those bursars are ACI. It's providing challenging career opportunities for young people to grow in program management and system engineering disciplines, and those disciplines are essential for us to manage large technical programs in this country, so it's a very good opportunity to train many young people in those skills so that we can carry on with this kind of venture in the future. What it also does is it raises the level of electronic and mechanical engineering industry in the country. We cover a wide number of disciplines in the program, including things like fine mechanics, electronics, embedded software, chemical engineering, aerodynamics, guidance, flight control, and optics. It also creates sustainability and hopefully will lead to the serial production contracts that we're looking for. So that it provides sustainability for Denel, but also for the wider industry in Denel. We will be looking forward to production contracts for our own Air Force and for the Brazilian Air Force in the near future. And generally, it creates jobs for the South African economy.
Based on those jobs, we directly employ about 130 people on the ADARTA program. And on the broader South African economy, we are creating about 1,000 technical jobs through outsourcing. Thank you.
I'd just like to show you this picture, which shows the ADARTA missile fitted to the Gripen. We've run a recent set of trials where we've released the missile from the Gripen aircraft. Those trials have gone flawlessly, and I must say that Saab is very impressed with the level of technology that we've demonstrated, both in the release clearance trials of the missile, in the flutter clearance trials, and also of embedding the ADARTA into the Gripen avionics so that the pilot is fully confident in the use of the missile on the wingtip. So that shows you the first of three recent launches that we've done from the Gripen wingtip, and with very good feedback from Saab in Sweden.
We were hoping to show you a clip of the video a couple of minutes, but unfortunately we've got an IT issue here. But maybe we'll try and, if we can't fix it up, we'll show it to you.
It's an air-to-air missile, so it's used in a dogfight kind of scenario. Yes, it's optimized for air-to-air. It's possible to adapt the missile in future for air-to-land use with relatively small modification, so it's a very good diversification of the product in the future. Okay, so in terms of program objectives, our first objective obviously was to develop a reliable fifth-generation air-to-air missile. As I say, there are only a couple of competitors in this capability in the world. And it makes, because of the independence from the United States, it makes it a very attractive proposition for many countries in the world. Keeping to the schedule and the budget is obviously very important in terms of our own and the Brazilian clients. Technically, on specification, we have actually proved ourselves to even exceed our own expectations in some areas, so technically the missile is well proven at this stage. In line with the planning, with careful risk management, we run a profitable program. The highly successful partnership with Brazil has been commended by both the Brazilian government and our own, and it will pave the way for future collaboration between the two countries on other programs. We're looking at UAVs, the Uncunto missile, where we have common interests in the two countries. Of course, we're looking to enable skills development to attract the next generation of rocket scientists. This kind of top-notch technology really does capture the interest of the young people, and they are proud to be working on such a program. So it's a very positive spin-off in terms of career development for our young people. And then, of course, it gives us the opportunity to look at other markets in the world and enter into serial production contracts with other countries. It's jointly between Brazil and South Africa.
South Africa is with the Department of Defense.
Department of Defense. That is the IP that is generated on the ADARTA program. The IP that was generated before the beginning of this five-year development program belongs to the South African government.
The other reason why we wanted to showcase the ADARTA program, and it talks to how does one evaluate the performance and the role of Denel as a state-owned enterprise. And what we are seeing with this program, we are able to strengthen South Africa's partnership with Brazil. And that's opening up the broader South American market as well in terms of our initiatives. And we are very pleased with the successes we've achieved in the program, and especially the credibility that we are getting from the Brazilian government at the very highest level. So as we stated earlier on, a challenge for us is around cereal production. And over the past year, we have reviewed our business development across the Danal Group. And the challenge for us is really to grow our turnover significantly. We've put together a plan. We've got set objectives for the year 2010. And we are tracking our achievements against those set activities. And our deliverables at the end of the day is really to grow our revenue. We've established equity partnerships, and we're looking at how do we leverage those equity partners to entities outside of the particular entities where they have invested in, without obviously protecting our IP, protecting our market and commercial acumen in these relationships, but driving revenue growth where these strategic equity partners are strong, or where both South Africa and ourselves can work together in strengthening our position in particular markets. No doubt the global environment has become quite competitive with the austerity measures being implemented worldwide. Our order book, as I stated, for 10-11, our order book right now is about 77%. At the time when we published the annual report, it was about 52%. Our concern is obviously our order books going forward. It should be much higher in the years going out of the current year, because the nature of this business is around long-term orders. And we are, through our business development model, we are looking at improving the position in years 11, 12, and 12, 13. From our revenue mix, we are dependent on South Africa, as we stated. The other big markets for us is Europe. And in Europe, we are pleased to inform you we are not involved in providing systems, but we are component manufacturers largely in Europe, and those then form entire systems that are then sold to other markets outside of Europe. Other big market for us is Middle East and North Africa, and we are seeing a growth taking place in across all of our markets. With our strategic equity partnerships, they've managed to improve our access into the North American market, which is quite an important market because they represent about two-thirds of the defense spend. Finance highlights. Our highlights for the past year is revenue 3.6 billion rand. This is just for the Danal Group. And if you have to include the associates, our revenue for the entire group was over 5 billion rand. Our R&D spend, 835 million. We've utilized cash of 416 million rand, largely in Danal South Aerostructures. We've improved our loss position before interest and tax by 283 million rand. And our net profit before DSA is 82 million rand. We've improved our net loss for the year from the previous year to 246 million rand. Overall, if you look at it across the key indices on slide 41, across sales, across gross profit, OPEX, and EBIT, you will see that we've shown steady improvement. Our sales has gone up. It would have been a lot higher had it not been for the decrease in the aerostructures business. On our gross profit, you would also see the negative gross profit in our aerostructures business. And on a total basis, our gross profit was slightly under 600 million rand. And from an EBIT, we concluded the year on a loss of 244 million in total. And there you see the split between defense, which achieved a 200 million rand profit, and aerostructures. From an operating expenses point of view, year on year, we've managed to decrease our operating expenses by 18%. So despite inflation through our cost measures and through once-off items not occurring, we were able to reduce our defense spend. And we can go into a bit more detail during the question and answer time later on. I suppose the other important thing is to look at the reduction in the OPEX in aerostructures year on year. So looking at our analysis with our defense and security clusters on slide 42, we show the loss of 246 million. If you had to add back the DSA loss, we then would have posted an 82 million rand profit. And if you then had to remove the interest because of the high level of debt, our defense and security and training and certification made a profit of 200 million rand. And this is quite a significant improvement from where we were in 2005, where the defense businesses showed a loss of 1.3 billion. Our debt is quite concerning to us. It is backed by government guarantees, and the total debt at the end of March was 1.8 billion. Our equity position at the end of March was just over 600 million rand. The impact of Danel in South Africa, quite important when one looks at a state-owned enterprise and what value do we add. Obviously, primary focus is around national security and improving our relation through the improvement of our relationship with the Department of Defense. We've been able to reduce the cost of ownership for defense. We do provide full cycle support. We've been able to ensure the military independence of South Africa, and we also provide support for border protection. We've been involved in peacekeeping and civilian campaigns, and I'm very pleased to tell you that during the 2010 FIFA World Cup, we had provided stabilized observation platforms from our associate Carl Zeiss, and this was fitted onto the South African police force, their helicopters for purposes of land surveillance. We've also developed products for anti-poaching. And this is not only anti-poaching, but also for drug detection and contraband detection as well. And we've seen great successes taking place. And the other important development recently was around copper theft, where some of our equipment has been used to prevent copper theft. These are reactive measures, but by adopting these reactive measures, hopefully we've been able to reduce the level of copper theft. In terms of our industrial strategy, the amount of money we spend on R&D, for the entire group, including the associates, we spent about R1 billion on R&D. And I think this is quite a sizable amount when one looks at across the state-owned enterprises and even in the private sector, representing over 20%. And we do generate significant export earnings. We are involved in design and development, positioning South Africa as an advanced manufacturer. Skills development, we create over 30,000 technical jobs in the industry. We do procure from the local industry, and we do have our technical academy and a number of bursary programs, internships, as we spoke about. And then also in terms of our international progress towards respecting the environment and all that we are doing to comply with environmental legislation. Our highlights, in summary, we've improved the financial performance, reducing our net loss from 1.4 billion to 246 billion, million. Our cash burden has reduced from 1 billion to 416 million rand. From a transformation point of view, we've achieved a level 4. We have various forums within the group in order to improve employee morale, and this has helped reduce the attrition rate. We've improved program management performance. We've improved governance and compliance. We've strengthened risk management. We've had over the past year an effective internal audit, and we've had a clean external audit. We've introduced a high-performance culture within the group. We've introduced stretch targets. We have our management development program. And over the past year, we've trained about 1,400 people in skills that are much needed in South Africa. Thank you, Dr.
That's it. We are willing then to entertain interaction, questions, suggestions, and so on.
Any questions? Your slide 22, you will have to disaggregate those figures in terms of demographics all the way. So not only the one of AC, what do you call that? That I. Yes.
African colored in.
And please send us the disaggregated figures within 5 working days, right? Okay, thanks. Members, can I note you? I'll start from this way, go that way, and then come this way. I'll just take down your names. Gloria. Gornos, Tikovo, Rose, I've written your name down. Ambrosini, Van Dijk and Van Dalen and Nana, Mento. I've written down everybody's name. We proceed. Thank you, Gloria.
Thank you. I'm going to start, I think, by referring to a comment on page 68 of your report. I want to start with the media reporting, because you actually, in that comment, you're quite positive, as I'm understanding it, with media reporting. And when we sit here, and I want to thank you for your presentation, one can be duly proud of what we are doing in South Africa. And again you hear this, we are world class, world class, world class. And I mean, just a comment. I said to somebody, we were doing the Donnell report today, and I said, oh, that's a things are all in trouble, eh? Now, I mean, you know, it isn't all in trouble. There's, you know, there are great improvements. And so I think my first question to you would be, you know, relating to the media, because it is such a topical thing at the moment, and that is to ask whether you are quite happy with the way the media are reporting, because, and I think this comment yesterday bears it out, we don't seem to get across to our people in this country, you know, what we are doing. So that would be my first question. The next one I want to pick up on, and I'm always very interested in, is human capital. Oh, okay. I'll have to pick them carefully then. And I would like to put this to Denise. The skills development that you talk about, and young people and being attracted to the missile engineering profession. How do you go about getting the message out there and encouraging people to actually get involved in this? What is the, you know, the way you practically work to attract people? Now, if I'm going to only have one other one. Well, all right. Okay. Well, let me stick with where I am, and I'll come back to the numbers later on. And then I'd just like to understand your South African Women in Engineering, the pre-employment programs. And again, this is related. Can you just give us a little bit more clarity on that? I'm very interested because, you know, one is seeing more and more women coming into this field, and can you just perhaps enlarge a little bit on that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to Mr. Sadik and the group for a very comprehensive report that you've given on an extremely important annual report. It's a pity that we only have half a morning or half a day to interact with you on such an important report, because there are much deeper issues that we need to go into detail with, and I'm afraid we will not have time for that, but that's how life is. But thank you for your report. I'm of the view that in agreement with the shareholder that Donnell is a strategic asset for the country, but you have serious challenges. Let me start with the, and I'm making comments and I'll ask my questions to assist the chairperson. In the independent auditor's report, it says that the group incurred a total comprehensive loss for the year of 205 million, which resulted in an accumulated loss of 4.8 billion as at 30 March 2010. That's on page 138. So that is a serious, serious challenge that we all have sympathy with you, but we also want to look at the situation very realistically, because the group is in trouble. Can I go to your director's report? Because I think it's a very good director's report, very honest, putting the facts on the table. And let me say at the outset, I agree with the CEO that many of your business entities are functioning very well. Like good results, a good financial balance sheets, and there is progress. But there are, as you've said, two major problems in your group. The one is DSA, and let me formulate my first question around DSA. In your own words, you said in your report, and you've confirmed it today, Mr. Sadiq, that the biggest loss maker in the group is DSA. If you look at your director's report, you look at the various restructuring initiatives. So we would like to know what progress you've made with, for instance, in your report, the restructuring, which includes the retrenchment of staff, the cost cutting, the seeking new business opportunities, including the, on page 143, the whole issue about the A-109 helicopters. That you, and I'm not going to repeat it, what is in the report, including the A400M. You've explained it, but I think this whole situation in DSA is messy. I don't have another English word for that. It is messy. My second question is about, DSA, the messy affairs, what progress are you making to get yourselves out of this biggest loss-making entity in the group? And then I need your view as well. You've got a 20% shareholder in Saab. Do you talk to them? Do they have a different view? Are you on the same song sheet? Do you talk together how to rectify the situation in DSA? Secondly, the missiles, Dynamics Missiles. We've been talking about this equity partner for a long, long time. Three of your business entities have gone into the equity partnership. And on page 17, you talk about the choices you have to make, either to go for an equity partner or to go for higher local production or local orders. And you acknowledge that there is a revenue challenge. And you're in constant discussion with DOD, Department of Defense and Military Veterans. Where does it get stuck that you cannot make a decision to say, yes, in this business entity, I want to go with an equity partner, like the other business entity that you showed here, with an improved access to markets? In this missiles business, Dynamics Missiles, you acknowledge that there's a revenue challenge. Now, who is holding you back that we cannot go into this partnership? My third question.
That was your third question. You'll come back in another round. You asked about the auditor's accumulative loss of 4. Something billion. Then you asked about DSA and then missiles.
I just made a comment on the accumulated loss. It was not showed on the slide. So I just want to put the perspective. The auditor said there's an accumulated loss of nearly 5 billion up to 30 March 2010. It's a comment that I made. I expect it, but it was not presented in the slides.
I'm going to give you the leeway, but I'm going to punish you also. I want you, in the meantime, Dr. Kuranov, to sit and think about the meeting you represented us in at SOPA when Dinel was presenting, and whether there was anything that you want to flesh in this meeting, coming from that meeting, but that one or two things that you would do in the second round. That's your punishment for being smart. You actually asked three questions, but I will allow you to ask the other one.
Thank you for the compliment. The two issues that I've asked, I've raised in SOPA. On DSA and the Dynamics missiles. Let me get the funding. In your report, you said that you're going to renew the guarantees of $1.3 billion by 30 March 2011, as well as extend the guarantee of $500 million by 30 July 2011. Now, these dates are between 6 and 10 months from today. What happens if you don't get that? In 6 to 10 months from now. Because then And in my second run, I'll go into the more detail. Because then, if you don't achieve these renewal and extensions of the guarantees, then we're going to be in a worse position, I think, in 6 to 10 months' time from now. So let me stop there and save the rest for that second look.
Thank you. Mr. Dikobo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on the issue of the staff profile, I know that the Chairperson has said that we need the breakdown into the actuals, but maybe just a comment to say, even before we receive that, the figure that so-called ACI is 50.8% just shows that it's highly disproportionate to how we know our country and the statistics in our country. But also, I think it was Ms. Wilson, I didn't hear, she was saying percentage of students who are ACI. I didn't get that number. So if I could just get that. Secondly, Chairperson, I want to know the contribution of DINEL in skills development in our country. I'm linking this to their technical academy, possibly high skill and all those things there. I just want to know if there is any relationship between this academy and, for example, your FET colleges in our country, higher education institutions. My guess is that the pool of their staff would be coming from there, by and large. So is there any relationship in terms of skill transfers and those things? The last one for now also relates to the issue of staff. I want to understand the retrenched staff, 300 or so. What social plan does DINEL have for these retrenched people? Is there some kind of reskilling to prepare them for life outside DINEL, or they are just retrenched and they will see how to come out or how to survive?
Thank you.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much. I think, like other members have said, one would applaud improvements that have been made by TNEL in and around certain disciplines. But I think TNEL and the department would agree that there's still a long way to go. I'm looking at this area where you had to retrench people, about 300 employees. And what one would want to understand, understanding that you were reducing staff, what skills areas were you looking at? What skills were you getting rid of within that staff complement? And I'm sure it would spill over to my colleague's question, where are those people? What is it that is being done about them? Secondly, TNEL is battling on skills retainment. And there is an aging workforce in TNEL, the old furniture in human beings. Now, what problems are you experiencing when you want to attract skills, yet at the very same time you have to shed, you shed skills on the basis of age? That is two. Secondly, thirdly, I was interested also on the women in engineering. Where is this now? Oh. And I was interested as to what are you looking at? It's given that demographically, definitely, you have to be very, very careful in terms of looking at what is this? Into looking at transformation. But what is it that you are looking at when you are headhunting South African women for engineering? Are you getting there? Are you succeeding? Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
That you are saying, Uputi.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also thank Dinar, thank the team and Sadiq for the presentation. I think it gave us at least a light as to what is happening there. Let me first comment by saying that we want to commend you for the 200 million rands that you've profited as compared to the net loss of is it 1.2 billion rand in 2005. I think that is an improvement of some sort. The first question, Chair, that was a comment, actually. The first question I would like to ask a question about the Roy Flag, because previously I know that the Roy Flag, that program actually was discontinued. Now I see that that program again is coming back. So I just need clarity around the Roy Flag program as to what is going on there. That will be the first one. The second one actually will be the R&D. I see that there's this Carl Zeiss Optronics Pty Ltd, which is a foreign company. I think it's from Germany, if I'm not mistaken. I see that we have spent about 9 million rands, that is on the, I mean to say 9% on the research and development. Now, my question there is that why do you spend so much when that company already is a foreign company? Why spend so much on R&D there? Because I would assume that that company already is, it's okay. Then was that the first question? The second one will be on the on page 111 on the hard copy report. No. Oh yeah. That was the question. Thank you very much for reminding me, Chair. And then there is this, what you call, on page 111, actually, I see that there is this student down there on that page. I see that there is a photograph of a black learner there. I just want to find out if it's a true reflection of those learners in that academy there. Are there no other racial groups in that program, or maybe you've just grouped that those learners for that particular report? Yeah. And then the last one, Chair, I think it's about the whistleblowing system as a part of the fraud prevention plan that DINEL has. I just wanted to find out if there are any incidents of cases of unethical behavior that have occurred within DINEL, because I was going through this report. I saw that they mentioned that they do have this whistleblowing system. So now, but they did not mention that they do have cases of them, you know, dealing with some. I just wanted to find out if maybe they do have some cases there, and what action have they taken once discovering that they were people who were busy, you know. Thank you very much, sir.
Madam Chairman, good morning. My apology for arriving late and my apology for leaving early and splitting myself with the trading industry on the public hearings on the high prices of steel, which is a great concern for the NEL, so they will appreciate my being there. But my going to the NEL, great company, great products, a new market, exciting environment, smart people, that's all nice. But from my viewpoint as a member of parliament, I think that I should be less concerned about how they run their business as I should be about what it means to us as the government and taxpayers in how they run their business. So I'd like to just focus on their finances and their financial thinking. We've heard a lot about their marketing thinking, their product development thinking, their corporate strategy thinking. But what is the thinking at the financial level? We have now a 246 million rand loss. Is there a thinking within the company that the government, the taxpayers, will continue forever to finance the losses? Or is there a thinking that can be disclosed here that on a specific time there is a cutoff, and I would like to know what the date is, 2012, 2022, 2032, at which point, if it doesn't make money, one kills it, or do we need to carry it forever? Because the concern I have, Madam Chairman, is that we are competing with our own citizens, and we are financing a company to compete with our own citizens at a loss. And this is my only question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just a comment before I ask the questions. In the CEO report, in the very beginning of this annual report, the words, and I'm going to quote here, the group continues towards profitability and will deliver positive returns for the shareholder in the medium term. Chairperson, my observation is that those are the same words year after year in the annual reports, and yet there is no recovery. Chairperson, on page 145, with the director's report, as funding concerns, it's been said that Danel made a loss of 1.5 million, and Danel became insolvent. Danel made a borrowing of 1.8 billion, and then you asked, you apply for the extension of the guarantees from the fiscus, from the government, actually from the taxpayer, till July 2011. And one of the honourable members already said that if we don't manage to pay back, you know, then probably there will be another application just to extend the guarantees. Chairperson, so it seems as if there is no recovery in sight. And my first question is, taking into account that Danel, it seems as if Danel hides behind this view of government, of the shareholder, that Danel is a strategic asset. Those words, a strategic asset. The first question is, what does it entail? Can you explain to us, you know, year after year we hear about the strategic asset, but what does it really entail that make it so strategic that you can't get rid of it? Secondly, Chairperson, there is no war in South Africa. Taking into account, again, the strategic asset, what contribution came from Danel over the past 10 years that South Africa can brag about? Because if there were performance, it would have led to many more contracts abroad that could have made Danel a profitable organization. Chair, my third question is, as far as the remuneration concerns, we will all recall that this came a long way in public enterprises. Again, if we look at the fixed remuneration of just one of the members of the executive for 2009, it was 5.6 million, and this year 3.8 million, and then the variable pay, an additional. The variable pay is based on performance. Now, if you take into account what's going on at Danel, I can't see the performance. Can we get an answer, taking into account that, according to the presentation, the productivity of Danel is only on a 25% level? How does one connect that to performance, if your productivity is on a 25% level? And how does one explain then this remuneration, the fixed remuneration and the variable pay based on performance? How does one explain this to the public? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Yes, Madam Chair, just on a point of clarity, I just wanted to know on this page 214 where they talk about the interest-bearing borrowers, does that mean they borrowed more money or did they increase their the amount of their investment so they have more interest on it? I just wanted to have clarity on it. And then I wanted to ask on page 220, they talk about the commodities and the swaps, where you have 1,177 and 496 tons of copper, which you, because you have copper, and then is it the same as what you do with coal? You stockpile it in a previous year because you think the price might be going up and then you sell it. Is that part of the 200 million rand profit that you made, is the selling off of stockpile? And then I would like to know, what other assets did you sell to build up this 200 million profit? Then I belong to quite a couple of these units that deal with copper theft, and I haven't heard Danel's involvement in these units, and they're quite national.
So I would like to know, what is the exact involvement of Donnell in copper theft, and how do you measure your part of the reduction or the increase in copper theft which you have claimed here today? And then obviously the last question is about the Indian lawsuit that Donnell had. What is going on with that? We didn't hear anything. We usually hear about it, but we didn't hear about it now. Is it solved? And how does that affect your business? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Nana?
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, the first one in page 94 of the annual report, termination by race and gender. It shows a number of 220 black males whose services have been terminated. I don't want to get into what termination means. Does it mean being fired or resigned? I'm less interested about that. But really what I'm interested in is to know why does it seem that black males are on their will at Denel? Could this be as a result of unfavorable working conditions for black males in particular, such that they decide to leave the company and go elsewhere? And the second one, Chairperson, is slide 38 of the presentation. It talks about, in fact, slide 38, countries are grouped. It will be Asia, Pacific, Africa, excluding North Africa, South Africa, South America, Europe, Middle East, and North Africa. Now my question is, in Denel's eyes, is North Africa not part of Africa? Why do you group them with Middle East if they are part of Africa? Is there a reason for that? And then thirdly is the Denel-Aid program. I'm glad that it appears in your annual report. This committee will bear testimony. It's a matter that is very close to my heart. It's very close to my heart. I would really want to know, because in the slide it only says 120 Southern learners are going through the UTNZ program. But can I check from which province are these learners? Their racial split, and also the disciplines in which they are studying. Thank you.
Chair, and honorable members, and the leadership from Denel, and thank you very much, Chair. Good morning. I may indicate, Chair, first of all, that royalty can never be late. It can only be delayed. and I apologize for any confusion that may be caused by that. Secondly, Chair, I appreciate the report. I'm aligning myself with the sentiments expressed by my colleagues who spoke before me. I'm on the highlight, Denel highlight. By the way, that on the point of appreciation again, Chair, appreciate that we received the report in time, sent to us in time. Appreciate that. But I would have appreciated more if this presentation was also sent almost simultaneously with this report. The reason for that, Chair, is that from the Denel's highlights, for instance, talking about the net loss reduced from 1.4 billion in 2006 to 246 million in 2010. I was slightly confused, hence my question for clarity. Because I was understanding that they were going to brief us about the financial statements for 2009 to 2010. Now the question is, what is the meaning of 2006? Why 2006? Why could they not compare, for instance, 2008, 2009 financial year vis-a-vis 2010
2010, so that we can see whether there is any improvement in that regard. That is the first question. Chair, the other one, worrying factor, do we have any turnaround strategy in Denial? Is there any light at the end of the tunnel of these losses? That is, incidental to the question that I've asked. You may count as a second question, Chair, I don't know. Then the other one, which I think my colleagues have already asked, is about to appreciate, of course, the people that have been trained, 1,400 people trained. I think in line with what we already indicated, Chair, earlier on, in terms of demographics and all. But in that dimension, I would appreciate, coming from my constituency being rural, when you're responding to those questions that have been posed by my colleague, just indicate to us the impact of this on rural communities and disadvantaged communities. Thank you, Chair.
I want to pull two things together before I ask my questions. The question of Chief is very important about what is the significance of 2006. Because if you show us one financial year as compared to the current one under review, you're not showing us a trend, and we cannot conclude that that is sustainable. So maybe you have to talk more to that. What's the significance, as he's asking this. But you've also dropped the concept of national security as one of your objectives, key roles, focus, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to know if there is a common understanding on the part of the shareholder that that is your role, that you are centrally placed within the, I don't know how to put the English word, but that your role is also primarily like DOD and others. You have a significant role to play in national security. And if so, whether therefore your support, your objectives, your relationship with other people, other structures in the national security paradigm is supported, enhanced, understood, facilitated. My three questions. Slide 38 was preceded by issue of Brazil aid data, your partnership. And you had said that that has helped you on an international front in terms of penetrating the market or whatever. But Brazil is part of South America. Your turnover per region for Denel and associated company, your slide in 38 does not show that penetration that you were saying the partnership has in the very region where Brazil is based, South America. So I find disconnect between your assertion that that partnership has assisted you in penetrating markets internationally, when you cannot penetrate the very region where your partner is located in, which is South America. I also would like to tease out your recruitment strategy flowing from Mr. Dikobo and Mr. Nana's questions, and I think somebody else. I think Mr. Kololo also. If you say that your current ICA figures are around 50%, and you consider all other issues of the age workforce that's predominantly male, et cetera, et cetera. What is your recruitment strategy? Why are you not unpacking your recruitment strategy to say that it is aimed at the worth addressing the question of Indian, Africans and colors only being 50%. And also your retrenchment patterns, you have not told us whether those pattern of retrenchment of the 300, how is it impacting on your 50% of ICA? So we really need some deep discussions around your demographics, not only in terms of race and gender, but also in terms of age. Because we all know the South African situation of high unemployment, but also high youth unemployment, which is a formula for disaster. So you have to go and rework your figures, also to embed in your figures your recruitment approaches, and whether you are tracking, you are analyzing your retrenchment pattern, are they top a pattern, and is that recruitment strategy talking to addressing your racial disaggregation, not only for now, also for the future. I don't know where you get your the analysis that you have impacted into the South African economy, the production of 30,000 jobs. You don't even tell us, are those permanent jobs or are they, what quality jobs are those? But where do you derive that figure from? Is that your own figure? Because if it's your own figure, it's suspect. We have to know how valid the claim is. Your R&D 20% spent, how does that relate to your hold on IP? Anybody that spends 20% of their budget on R&D should boast a high figure of intellectual property, right? Throughout your presentation, you are always silent on IP, and yet you are such a strategic, scientific-orientated company. We have always to dig out and probe your facilitation of our cutting edge in terms of technological advancement. I want to be fair to members and stop here, and then you answer the questions, and then we see if we can take one more round of one question each, or two questions for those who might have two. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. And
money and injustice. I was captured as having slashed you very badly in terms of your performance, in terms of your two business units. If you want to speak to that in terms of what the trends that your annual report is showing, please feel free to do that.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to you and to members of the committee for the questions that have been posed. And we will try our best to answer your questions. And then if there's a follow-up clarification, we can then engage with that. I also understand that there is a study trip that's going to be undertaken to Denel, and where we don't have some of the information available, we will make that available at the time when you visit Denel, and we look forward to your visit. The way we will approach it is to take each question as it's come, Chair, and hopefully we would cover all of it. And my colleagues and myself, we will try our best, as I said, to answer it. In terms of the media strategy, what we have done is we've developed a media strategy both to communicate internally and externally. And this strategy is supported by a public relations company. Our strategy is focused on internal stakeholders and external stakeholders. We go to roadshows internal in the organization and also broader stakeholders outside of Denel, but very close to Denel, like the Department of Defense, DTI, DST, various other departments as well in government. On that internal, we do newsletters. We have senior leadership forums that takes place twice a year,
and in addition to all of the other communication platforms we have. Each entity within the Danel Group also produces these newsletters to communicate to its employees and key stakeholders. On the external side, we have set ourselves a target to showcase all of the entities within the Danel Group with a strong focus around the technology and the value that they add to South Africa. And we are seeing progress around there in terms of the coverage we are getting in the media. Obviously, the media, I understand, are under significant pressure around the ad spend, and hence they cut off paging, and some of the stuff that's not newsworthy to their readers, they would not generally cover. We try our best to sell as much stories as we can, but I suppose the media believes that good news versus bad news, how much of good news can they put in their newspapers. We do also host technology days across the group, and we invite the public to those technology days. The recent development that we've had was recently the launch of our optical facility, which was for the first time in 20 to 30 years we've done that, and regrettably we did not get any media coverage for that. But on the positive side, MECHM, which is our only United Nations accredited mining company, they celebrated 50 years of existence over the past year, and our Danel Technical Trading Academy has celebrated 45 years of its existence. So media, engaging with the media, is high on our mind, and we do our best. So we make a concerted effort. There are reports that would be negative. We will then respond to it and reports that are positive. And again, if clarification accuracy is required, we will also respond. But we make an effort. We were pleased when we released our annual results, the coverage that we did get, and the debates that did take place. No doubt, there needs to be more debate on what the defense industry can do for South Africa, the defense and aerospace industry. We believe there's a good story to say. And if one just looks at the success of the African Aerospace Defense Show that took place recently, it was very well received in South Africa. We have measures that we have in place to track our coverage, track our publicity against the cost, and this is something we evaluate on a regular basis as well. In terms of your question to Denise?
The question was, how do we attract young people to engineering? There's a number of different activities, and we do it on a number of different levels. To start off with, at Danel Dynamics, we run the Dinner Lady School, which teaches maths and science to matriculants and standard 9. That already does a lot of work with young people, to attract them to maths and science, and we see significant improvements in their results, in their exams. Then the sponsorship at universities is backed up by a number of visits to places of learning all over the country. We go and visit the universities, and as part of our bursary campaign, we do publicize the engineering technologies that we are busy with, and we manage to attract bursars of very high level of performance. I think we get significant number of students that are scoring in the 80s and 90s in the year results. When the students return to Danel after having finished their degree courses, we have a Danel Academy of Engineering, which we run, where the students are given, they're actually employees at that stage. They're given projects to run that simulate projects in the external environment. It gives them a chance to learn at relatively low risk how to manage projects and how to do development. And then we follow that on with mentorship programs for each young person. So there we address the skills transfer from the aging workforce, ensuring that the young people are given the chance to grow in their engineering know-how.
Thank you. Patience, the next question dealt with FA Women Engineer.
Okay, thanks for that question. I think linking to what Denise was saying, we, in the previous years, we found that it was a bit like being in mining, where women saw mining as a bit of a men's environment. So we took it upon ourselves to look at enticing girls to get learners to come into the engineering for. So what we did was we went around to the institutions of higher learning looking at those students that are willing and have some interest in engineering, and we've been working with them to on various occasions to bring them on board, to show them the products that we have, because we typically found that they were turned off by the fact that it's quite mechanical, you know, you get your hands dirty and that kind of thing. So the Women in Engineering program, we started 2 years ago, and we are working with the lady engineers at universities so that when they complete, we hopefully will be able to attract them into the business.
Thank you. John, we had a question on Danelle Saab Aerostructures, and I'd like to refer the committee to slide 17. There were questions around the ESA, the A109, and the A400M, and the role of Saab.
Thank you, Tilly. The two questions, well, the question related to the Gusta contract and the A400M contract. To put this into context, DSA is a supplier to these original equipment manufacturers, these two companies. That's where it starts and ends. We're simply a supplier. On Augusta, the work has run out with the original obligations, offset obligations that were placed through Augusta, the work that was placed on DSA. The A400M, as that we all know, is well publicized. There's been an extended delay in the A400M program, which was a 2 to 3 year delay, which meant that the revenue that was coming into DSA has been delayed. The revenue we would be paid for supplying certain key components and really structural parts to the A400M. We do work with Saab in benchmarking in terms of what they have done in restructuring their aerostructures business in Sweden. So at board level, we do work with Saab in that regard. The DSA is in a very difficult position because we've had a 50% reduction in revenue, and particularly in the next 2 years, it's very, very tough for that business. Revenue's reduced significantly. And so we've looked at all possible measures to reduce the cost base. You know, you've got 675 employees off a revenue base of currently about 350 million this year. Very, very difficult to run a business on those kinds of levels. So we will be cutting costs in a number of areas going forward, and we are also in engagement with the shareholders on the DSA restructuring plan. I hope that answers your question.
The next question that dealt with Dynamics Missiles and our equity transaction. We did realize that as we were going to go forward and conclude new equity transactions, the dependence on the local defense force is going to be quite significant on those particular businesses. And as a result of that, the defense environment had stated that they first needed to complete a defense strategic review prior to us going ahead to conclude some of our other equity partnerships, which is regarded as being quite strategic stroke sovereign for the South African Defense Force. So where we are is that there is a defense strategic review that's taking place. We understand that we will get an update in December this year as to the progress that's been made and how we progress with the other equity partnerships. To date, the equity partnerships that we've done, we're less dependent on the South African Defense Force to the ones we want to reach to. We have submitted an application to DPE, and DPE is engaging with the defense environment on the future equity partnership profile. So that's where we're at. In terms of the financial viability, in light of the delays that we've had in concluding the equity partnership, for the current year that we're in, we've been engaging with the Department of Defense to see how we can close the gap, and those discussions are going well. So we are hoping that for this financial year we would reach a solution, but going forward, it's really to say how do we position this business sustainably going forward. And we obviously do not want to create a subsidized business mindset into this business. So even in our discussions currently with defense is to align it with various products and various research projects. Okay, in terms of guarantees, I'll ask our Fikile to respond to that.
If we look at the annual report, you will notice that the shareholders' equity closed at about 644 million rands. if you take that number and look at it against the sort of losses that we post, then it does point out that there is indeed, as the auditors have pointed out in the auditor's report, that there is a going concern risk. To answer your question specifically, is if you look at the cash that we closed with at the end of the financial, it was 1 billion rand, and against debt of double the number, which is about 2 billion rand. So if the guarantees were not to be available, backing up that debt, then indeed, as you have done your sums, the company would seriously be in trouble. But on the other hand, if you then look at it and say, if we analyze the financial performance of the company and say what areas are profitable and what areas unprofitable, what contributes to the losses that we've posted for this year and last year, it singularly points out to one particular area. And then I think before the end of this session, we're going to be saying, even maybe give you a hint in terms of how we're dealing with that particular area, which John has alluded to, in terms of that there are a number of interventions that are being implemented. But certainly if you look at the fact that there is a revenue issue in that business, it leaves us with something that we have to work with our stakeholders in terms of finding a solution for it, which we may not be in a position to share at this level.
Thank you. There was a question around the staff profile and also the contribution we make to skills development and our link with the FET colleges, and also the social plantations.
All right. The concern for the committee is the disproportionate profile of staff in Denel. If you refer back to the annual report, you will see that we had targeted for a triple BEE level 5, and we ended up at a level 4. The transformation program in Denel is something that we are all very passionate about. However, there are two areas that we have found that we are struggling or being challenged. The one is the area of employment equity, and the other area is skills development in terms of spend and in terms of the instances of training. And the reason for that is quite simple. If you look at our financials, the company is not growing. And when the company is not growing, you don't have the number of opportunities you need to diversify the organization. So what we have really done is that for every opportunity that we get, we ensure that that opportunity assists us in diversifying the workforce. But you will appreciate that it is quite difficult if you're working in an environment where there is no growth or there is basically regression. But I can assure the committee that in terms of our transformation program, all the other elements we've done very well in the areas that we are struggling with, as I said, is the area of employment equity, and obviously that impacts on skills development of ACIs, because if you don't have those numbers, you will not be able to spend the amount of money that you would like to spend on development of those people. But it is something that is directly, clearly on our watch, and every opportunity, as I said, we use to diversify the working environment.
You know what, sorry. I don't know why do you compound BEE with a sub-profile. The two do not relate to one another at all. Secondly, you are having an opportunity of recruiting young people, as you report in engineers, in terms of women and many other people. We are asking, what are you doing with those opportunities? Not like there are no opportunities that are totally non-existent. We want you to prove to us that those small opportunities that you have in those areas, you are cognizant of your situation, and you are in it might not be full circle in terms of addressing your concern. I'm not happy with your report.
Yeah, I think also just to refer to page 94 of our annual report, if you look at it, there was a reference made to the terminations, but if you look at the appointments, and if you look at the appointments we've made over the past year, we've made 356. And in terms of black males, we've appointed 52. There's 52% of those appointments were black male, compared to last year, this time was 48%. And in terms of black females, Last year it was 14% of our new appointments, and this year it is 27%. So there's work that we should do to present information, to look at the issues that you've raised, either in the annual report going forward, but definitely to respond in more detail to your question. Thank you. Over to the linkage with the colleges.
Okay. We also have our Denel Training Academy, which we use as a source of skills development. Those of you who would know, the Denel Training Academy is responsible for artisan training, which links to the development of artisans and accreditation of artisans in the country. There is a target that has been set by the Ministry of Higher Education to train 14,000 new artisans by 2012. And that basically is our training mechanism, or it is our mechanism to assist in that target. We have in the past trained for ESCOM. We've trained for the CSIR. We've had a program specifically looking at training for the DOD, and we also do training for our own youth. So the Denel Training Academy is really well placed to ensure skills development, not only for ourselves, but also for the country. Okay, there was also a question on the social plan. Denel has a very competitive social plan, which was an agreement signed by all organized labor in 2005. That social plan assists with business training. We also assist with funding of such businesses. What also typically happens is that if the business plan takes off, that is where we also source for our supplier development in terms of our BBBE. We also do counseling and reskilling. Where there are people that could be reskilled in different areas, we do that and we redeploy those skills. In the social plan, there's also a provision for post-retrenchment medical cover. So for a period of time after retrenchment, employees do get assistance with medical cover. So we believe that the social plan that we have is quite competitive. And there are a number of organizational SMMEs that started from the social plan and eventually were added into our supplier database. And those organizations are being used by the company currently.
Your response is generic. You say you have a social plan, you have SME emerging out of this, and it is drawn together with labor and all this. Please try and answer the question specifically.
Okay, Chair. Yes, what I wanted to imply is that the social plan, the 300 people that were mentioned, are covered by the social plan. All the employees that are affected by retrenchments in Denel, obviously we try and redeploy them inside the organization, and failing which, then the social plan kicks in. So the social plan is an agreement that we have with organized labor, and all affected employees are covered by it.
Is it covered? You can add a page to your outstanding information on this agreement on the fate of the 300 retrenched. Can you account for this, please?
Oh, we will definitely do that. Okay. A portion of the answer, maybe just to respond to it. Of the 300 people, some of them are affected with the completion of the design and development work on the A400M. The work comes to an end by July next year. As a result of that, we will then be terminating those services. The 300 people make up to 300 people, because the number we are looking at right now is about 285. And that process starts now until July next year. And in there, we have international contractors whose contracts will come to an end with the A400M design ending. We also have local contractors, and regrettably, there will be permanent staff that will be affected and apprentices as well, purely based on where the company is financially, because one cannot afford to keep the company going. But we will give you a more detailed response. In terms of the next question, the relationship between Denel and Arms Corps, Denel is an industry player, so we are a service provider to the Defense Ministry. Arms Corps is the contracting or procurement agency on behalf of Defense. our contracting relationship will be with Arms Corps. So where we are involved in long-term programs or programs that could be regarded as capital acquisition programs, we will enter into a contract that would specify when these programs would be delivered by, what specifications, and what the cost would be. And there those negotiations then take place on an arm's length basis. We also do negotiate or enter into operational type contracts with other agencies within the defense environment. But we believe the demarcation between Arms Corps and Danel is quite clear. What we've also seen positively is an improvement in our relationship with Arms Corps, right up to the board level. We do not see a treading of toes in the relationship with Arms Corps. In terms of competition overseas, no doubt that has increased. At the time when our bubble burst locally, globally, the Cold War had ended, and then the markets that we were targeting were also then penetrated, became a ground for your international OEMs operating in the Western markets, and hence it became quite competitive, and we are now seeing it coming back to be very competitive. What we are seeing is that with the austerity measures being implemented in Europe and also in the US with a decline in defense spend, you are having these international players going to our traditional markets and being a whole lot more competitive in terms of their pricing, because they would have amortized their research and development costs in their home markets. When they go out there, one is experiencing a deflationary environment, and hence we are not able to increase our prices. They are also offering technology transfers to the extent that they can, and their governing regime will allow it. They are transferring those IPs to their customer base as well, which was quite unusual from the past, where countries were very protective. They still are with their latest technologies, but in terms of technologies that are a bit dated, they are becoming more freely available in the market. So our cost pressures are quite significant. In terms of civilizing technologies, we have tried that in the past. We were not successful, and hence we did get out of certain non-core businesses. With the defense spend reducing in South Africa, we made investments, and we have found that we are not able to manage these investments. However, so we haven't had a great experience. But saying that, some of our businesses are involved in civilian applications. If I look at our business, PMP, which is involved in small and medium caliber ammunition, they do manufacture drill bits for the mining industry. They're a critical player in there. We also supply hunting ammunition, and we also supply propellants to other industry players. In terms of DSA, the Danel Saab Aerostructures, there we have a world-class composite manufacturing capability in there, and one can then lend itself those capabilities into manufacture of turbines or manufacture of composite materials in whatever applications they can be. But there are challenges in there, because for military applications or aerostructures, you really need to receive the highest standards of accreditation, and you train your staff to that level. When you're involved in other applications, your standards are not as onerous as it would be on the aerospace industry. And that's something that you need to be concerned about. And then on Danel Aviation, MRO, maintenance, repair, and overhaul facilities, at the moment it is largely dependent on the Air Force, but we also look at providing MRO services to civilian aircraft as well. In Carl Zeiss Optronics, we are also involved in our manufacture of optical components. The focus is largely military, but that could also lend itself to civilian applications. In terms of collaborations with the space industry, the space project, the other point to make on the civilian technology is that with the strategy that Danel followed, we tend to outsource a lot of work locally, and hence the point which we will respond later on is the creation of jobs in the local industry. A lot of the support we give there is to SMMEs. At the time when those SMMEs were created, they were largely dependent on defense, and they were largely dependent on Danel for its business. What we've seen with those SMMEs is that they were able to diversify their business not only in South Africa but globally. So they've been able to reduce their reliance on South African revenue. And the other important development is that the mixture of defense and civilian revenue has also increased. Because whatever skills and knowledge they gain in a defense providing us with a service, they are able to lend us to other applications in the civilian market.
In terms of the spacecraft, we are involved in different levels. Carl Zeiss will be involved in the manufacture of certain optical components for the satellite project there. We obviously do not have that size of a lens. We're not in the manufacture of that massive lens. But smaller lens and the component manufacture, we do explore those opportunities. At OTB, we have the capability to for the launching of satellites at our missile test evaluation center, and also to downlink information coming out from the satellite. But we are also involved in various. This is something we are involved in. We participate in the projects that are set up by the DST. And we engage in those platforms to look at what opportunities exist for us. But it's something that's definitely in our horizon. Yes, sure.
If I may, the management, of course, is handling the detailed questions as is appropriate, but now and again, at board level, one might want to make the odd point. I understood if you are addressing the point about the analogy with NASA. I understood the point to be that your perception is that collaboration between Danel and other entities, universities and so on and so forth, in a manner analogous to what one may see, say, in the U.S. and then use NASA as an analogy, is rather weak. I'd like to suggest that maybe the more appropriate analogy would be with other defense entities rather than a space agency like NASA. And the entities that would come to mind if one is thinking, say, of the U.S. would be Lockheed Martin, it would be Boeing, it would be Raytheon, it would be General Dynamics, and then ask the question, to what extent do those entities engage and work with universities, and what is the nature of engagement? And there certainly is quite a difference between civilian entities and the likes of space and non-defense activities and defense activities with regard to collaboration. Having said all of that, there are definite areas that one can identify where there is a strong collaboration. In South Africa, generally, not just involving Danel, but involving Danel, involving universities, involving the entities such as the one that I'm at, CSIR and so on. Radar technologies is a case in point, where South Africa is in fact extremely strong, and there remains very strong collaboration involving particular investors. Ewa here in Cape Town, UCT, for example, is one of them. This is something that we can talk about in a little bit more detail. I think the challenge lies very much at the other end, at what our intention is in doing that kind of development. Is it because we have identified markets, or because you simply want to retain competence in those areas, and are the markets necessarily internationally open to us in such a manner that we can have sustainable businesses in those areas? But that is me. I'd like to say a little bit more about that a little later.
Thank you. The next question was, in addition to the response that our chair has given, the collaboration with the universities, to the extent we can then share with you some of the relationships that we have, patients, and then patients will also respond to the skills that we are losing at DSA, skills retainment, and women in engineering.
Okay, I think we've covered women in engineering. We've also covered DSA skills that we're losing to some extent. But just to also add to what the chair was saying on the collaboration with universities, there's quite a number of technologies that we have found that in the last 10 years or so have been depleted, and we've had to assist the universities to keep some form of capability to be able to help us retain those skills. He's already mentioned the radar one, and I think Denise could also mention quite a few technologies that we are in collaboration with universities on. And again, the issue is over the few years with the depletion of skills in Danel, we have to use institutions of higher learning to ensure that the skills are replenished, and at least we have skills development continuing in the group. Okay.
Again, we don't want to act like we are prosecuting, you see. Our questions are very specific.
what collaborations are there. We should be saying, with this university we are doing this project, with this university. We can't just say, you know, we are sharing technology. It doesn't help us. That doesn't help us at all.
Denel has about 11 entities, and there is a lot of detailed information on the programs that we have. You know, obviously, we can present some of it here, but we will send the detailed information. Before we do that, I was asking Chair if Denise can also give you an example on some of the programs that she's having to manage at Denel Miss House.
You know, I'm the last person to keep on commenting negatively when a young black woman is presenting. But you see, there's nothing obvious to us. If you keep on saying obviously, I'm giving you an opportunity to add to the list of things you will respond to, your collaborations. This question is clearly a question of interest to members, and I want it to be answered in a very justifiable manner. I am giving you the opportunity to, if you can't fully respond to it now, to add it to the list of things that you would respond to later in writing.
Chair, we take note and we will do that. Thank you. Okay. We then proceed in terms of the ROIFOC program. The Minister of Defence has taken a decision that the ROIFOC program is required for their capabilities within the Air Force. We are at the moment engaging with Arms Corps and the Department of Defence on going forward. There is a requirement to have the aircraft fully operational by next year, April, and we are working towards that goal. There is a requirement to have a certain number available by the end of March. And then the balance will go through during next year. So that's what we are working on. We are working to get alignment with ourselves. There may be some changes to the contract that would have to be effected by ArmsCorps, and funding will then be made available. But as far as the Chief of the Air Force is concerned, the ROIFAR capability is important for their fleet. So that's on ROIFAR. Then there was a question on research and development and the Carl Zeiss Optronics spend, and I will ask my colleague Fikile to respond to that, the 9%.
In terms of the Carl Zeiss policy, now Carl Zeiss is owned 30% by Danel, 70% by the Germans, which is the Carl Zeiss Optronics out of Germany. In their own financial results, allocated 10% of, in terms of the policy, 10% of their revenue, and to be spent towards research and development. In the reference in our slides, we're saying that for the year ended, they spent 9%. Now, it's not money taken from Danel. It's the money the company as a standalone, out of its own coffers, is spent in this country in research and development.
This is IP that's owned in the company and it's registered in South Africa. It would not be registered with the IP Patents Authority, because in the defense environment, one is quite sensitive about registering some of this IP, because one would need to make available detailed information which your competitors will then have access to. But in terms of selling off that IP to any country outside of South Africa, you need to get Reserve Bank approval and you need to get SARS approval. And both those approvals are not easily obtainable.
Just one more. There's also one commendable point, is that they are spending significant amount in relation to the percentage that we are able to afford to spend as Danel, which I think that's quite a positive.
And there was a question around whistleblowing and a fraud prevention plan, and I'll ask Fikile to respond to that as well.
The fraud hotline is controlled by an independent audit firm. It receives the calls that go into that company. Reports get generated. Copy of that report goes to the Audit and Risk Committee, and the copy goes to NTT CEOs. All the issues that get reported thereon are investigated and appropriate action is taken. In some cases, there could be issues that would result in disciplinary and people being fired. In some cases, some issues would be proved to be not valid, but we follow any independent investigation processes in that regard. So there is a robust process. There are campaigns that get run, the number gets advertised, and it's also put in the annual report with the purpose that if the stakeholders are aware of certain issues, they can call on to that number and it's managed independently. And there's a governance process around it.
We do not have the details of those hotlines because some of them are valid, some of them are not. But what we can assure you is the governance processes as outlined by Fikile. And at each audit and risk committee, not only at the Danel level, but at each company within Danel, there is a report presented on matters that were reported to the hotline and the actions that's been taken to close out those matters. And then in our annual report, you would see on page 95, we have a list of all the disciplinary and grievance cases. What we do not give you is the details of what supports that. But to the extent if you wish to see that, we can then engage with you. And maybe that's something we can cover when you do visit us in November. Then in terms of...
Can I just follow up, Chairperson? On page 95, I see that there are cases... grievance procedures that are against Danel. Would you just enlighten us what nature of cases were you defeated on and why?
Okay, I think we'll have to get back to you to that level of detail, Honourable Member. Unless, Patience, do you remember some of them or no?
No, I think at the risk of, pulling things out of the air, I think that level of detail we will present when the honourable members come to visit. We do have that info.
We'll make it available in writing as well, because that's all public.
Chairperson, I don't really want to to track this, this part of this meeting, but you know from time to time we would get some...
some funny letters from people claiming that this has happened in this SOE and this one is corrupt and so on and so on. Fortunately, as the committee, we've got a position in how we would process such communication. But for the benefit of the committee, in whatever additional responses you'd be providing us, is it possible that you also include in your list the number of cases that have been brought by whistleblowers that were found to be valid, and those that you picked up there was no substance into them?
If I may, Chair, certainly that information will be made available, and one values the questions that honourable members are putting to Danel, and one respond as best one can, including, for example, the list of universities that Danel is collaborating with, everything that's been raised here when the visit takes place. I would like to suggest, however, if I may, Chair, that it's possible to run the risk of getting bogged down in detail here. There are some high-level issues that perhaps do require addressing, if I may, and may I just make 2 points. One is a direct follow-up to the comment, Honorable Mugwena. We don't see the collaboration and the profile of your involvement in certain big profile projects, and therefore we tend to suspect, we might be inclined to take the view that we're not doing very much. I think one of the things we need to appreciate is that whatever Danel is involved in, also must understand what the boundaries are, what this set of activities is. And also, but even more importantly, collaboration need not necessarily take the form of one entity working with another. It could be just the movement of people, and probably that's actually the more important thing. The fact that people join a university and move on and work at entities, and then they acquire greater expertise and move on and work at other entities. You raised the example of the SALT, Southern African Large Telescope. Now, it so happens that the program leader of SALT, who's made it the success that it is, the design that it is, which is acknowledged to be a great design, cut his teeth at Danel, working on the RFARC. Now, the same individual has moved on to Optimal Energy, where he is working on the Joule electric vehicle. Now, one needs to acknowledge that there are commonalities of skills across a variety of areas of activities, and that it's people that actually make these projects a success by moving from one to the other and learning and picking up expertise and moving on. So really, the strategic assets that collectively as a country we are investing in is skilled people, it's knowledgeable people. And a legitimate question was raised, which we'll get to, I suppose, as we go through the questions, that you keep referring to yourself as a strategic asset. But who says so? And that's a fair question. There's an assumption that there is agreement on what is considered to be strategic. And at one level, if without sounding too bleak, one would argue that what is strategic is the fact that one is able within that institution to provide the space for people to develop in areas of technology that are important for general economic growth. Now, that is a little vague, important though it may be. You might then argue, but what are those specific strategic areas that make you a strategic entity? And I think that there has then to be a higher level consensus amongst ourselves, the South Africans, that these are the elements, for example, in defense that are strategic, that therefore of necessity, that must be pursued within the country, and the question of whether or not they're pursued within Danel or in the private sector or in other at the universities, that then becomes the next level of debate, which would also then inform a lot more clearly what we do with, for example, a DSA. It is messy, as I put it. There's no question about that, Dr. Kono. But sometimes when you have a conversation about DSA, somebody might take a view, for example, a trade in industry, that now wait a minute, there's an aerospace strategy.
within that aerospace strategy, there are things like unmanned aerial vehicles, there is a command and control, and indeed, we may want to have a view that we want to have to be involved in the manufacture of whole aircraft for the sake of argument. I do not know. But the point of the matter is that you then have to ask, is aerostructures then, within the context of the aerospace strategy, a strategic element or not? If we believe that it is as a country, and we want to drive the aerospace strategy, and aerostructures is an important component of that, then one would look at DSA with different eyes, and then say that it then becomes justifiable to provide strategic support with a clear long-term vision of where you are going with aerostructures expertise. Then the spend that you put in must not just be seen as sinking money into an entity that does not make money, but as a strategic investment. And I think that distinction between money that's simply rescuing an ailing entity and a strategic investment that is guided by a very clear vision of where you want to go, that's where a lot of the time we have a difficulty. But to be assisted, we need to be assisted also by this committee in beginning to have a clear vision, clarity on what the strategic areas are, so that we can then begin to make the statement, we are pursuing these strategic activities and safeguarding these strategic assets because there is a consensus that they are strategic. It's not just what we say. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Dr. Van Dijk's question is quite critical. And with your permission, I think maybe we need to start this conversation to ask this question, what is so strategic about DNEL? Why is it a strategic asset? And with your permission, I would like to propose that when we do DNEL's oversight visit sometime in November, we should spend as a starting point a quarter or half a day talking to this question so that they don't just show us what they are doing there in OR Tambo in Johannesburg, but we begin to engage this question, are you really strategic? What's so strategic about you, if that is okay with members? That's the proposal from the chair. I see heads nodding. Mr. Kololo?
Thank you very much, Chair. Also, I think we'll need, like for instance me, I'll need to know as to what is the meaning of strategy? Because everything is strategic, and all that.
I said we will, together with DNEL, we will and bounce off with you members what is it that we want to engage in for that half a day when we do oversight. Why is DNEL a strategic asset, and if it is a strategic asset, so what? How should it be handled? Dr. Kornoff?
I agree with that, but can I take it one step further? On your annual report on page 15, you put the critical question and challenge to say you need to classify the DNEL's capabilities as either strategic or sovereign to the DoD. Now, that is a key question. So let's broaden it, not only strategic actors, but what is strategic and what is sovereign? Who is responsible? What progress has been made? And who is delaying this? I'm very concerned that you, Mr. Sarek, said to us earlier that we're still waiting for the strategic defense review. I mean, somewhere there's a delay in the process, and it's costing this country. So I want to support the chairperson, but let's focus on what is strategic and what is sovereign. We've been discussing this at the Reserve Bank gathering, was it 2 years ago? Exactly that, with various departments. Here we, in 2010, we still don't have an answer there. Because that goes back to what the independent auditors say about your going concern, what you yourself say in your director's report on the going concern. And you mention certain factors. But it's scary because some of those factors are given, the low level of shareholder equity. It's a given at this point in time, your financial losses. We need to engage. I need to understand further this huge losses of this one loss-making entity. And lastly, the strengthening of the rand. I mean, the rand is just strengthening more and more, and you mentioned in your report.
I'm going to cut you.
It's a knock-on effect.
Thanks. You are going to be yourself and myself and the chairperson and CEO of DINEL will do preparatory work on this discussion that we are going to engage in, and we will be open to any volunteer who want to so that we do a bit of groundwork. We don't piece them, we don't know really what we want to grapple. I'm drawing you in because we were part of the discussions 2 years ago. If there is any other person that is willing also to shape the discussion, and we will broaden it like you suggest, we rest our case here. You may proceed to answer other questions.
Thank you, Chair. Just to close off on that discussion, one needs to also note that the defense and security side of the NELS business has done well. You know, it's in terms of a burden to the taxpayer, we believe we are exiting that burden. But in terms of DSA, that's the challenge we have. And there, one then needs to talk, what is the relationship of the Department of Defense in there? How does the aerostructures also link in with IPAP 2? Very much along the lines as pointed out by Dr. Sibisi. In terms of, then I'm going to say that the strategic questions have been addressed, Chair. The point that I would like to then talk about is the remuneration, the fixed variable remuneration, and there I would ask patience to respond to that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Talib. The question on remuneration and variable pay, on the annual report there was an indication that in the previous year the remuneration was 5.6 million. And the remuneration in the past financial year was 3.8 million. In the previous portfolio committee meeting, we gave a breakdown of what made that 5.6 million, part of which was a long-term incentive that was agreed upon and that had to be closed. So that difference was because of that once-off payment. The structure that we have in the group is because of the historical problems with market-related salaries. The board approved that we introduce what we call a variable pay system. And the variable pay system is really to enhance performance and forms part of the employee's total pay. So in some instances, you will find that employees who have not performed would not be party to that variable pay. But that was a strategy that was intended to ensure that due to the fact that we're behind the market in salaries, and we still are quite far behind the market, we were not in a position to afford market-related salaries. We had to come up with strategies to retain skills in the group. And hence, you've seen the attrition rate indicating that we've moved from a 13.8% attrition rate to the current 4.5%. And part of that was mainly because we have introduced a variable pay system.
Also, part of the question was around the productivity level was about 25%. And the point that I was making during my presentation is that that was present in one entity, which was the NELS South Aerostructures. Before VP is paid, there are set targets that are contracted with all employees, and there are also stretch targets that are agreed upon. We have a performance management system that's comparable to best practice locally and internationally. So the 25% productivity was at DSA, and no variable pay was paid at DSA because of the poor performance of that company. But in the rest of the group where performance was achieved and has per contract, then we honored those agreements. So the low productivity was just present at that one particular company.
Thank you. I just want to understand, and I'm coming in here because, you know, of it having been raised. I want to understand on page 149, I actually see in relation to the total amount that there's been a reduction for Mr. Sadek between 2009 and 2010. But for the rest, there's been an increase. Now, I want to relate this now to help me to understand this, if you turn to page 180, under the number director's remuneration, it says there executive director's 10 million. Now, that has not changed. I can't understand how in one table you're talking about increases and in another table, I think it's referring to the same thing. It's the same. So I would just like to understand that a little bit better. Thank you.
Flowing from your answer, I agree with you. We explained Mr. Sadek's salary in the previous situation. But what I hear you say, this is part of your retention strategy. But when I look at your fixed pay for your top five, excluding for fixed pay Mr. Sadek, the other five members, and I can mention their names, but also in your variable pay, when you look at the 2009 total for the other five and variable pay for all six, and you look at your 2010 figure and you work out the percentage increases, it's huge. It's way above the current inflation rate. The lowest increase percentage-wise between total 2009 to total 2010 is 13%, 21%, 24%, 120% and 159%. I haven't worked out the others. Do I understand it correctly? Do I read the table correctly? And do I hear you correctly, your answer to say, sir, this is a retention strategy?
No, I thought there was going to be a next round, but seeing that this particular question was not answered on collaboration, my question was FET colleges and universities, and I haven't heard a thing about FET colleges. And I have some kind of bit of a concern, because what we hear is that in our FET colleges, for example, there's just a huge skills shortage. Lecturers there coming from ordinary colleges of education haven't been converted, those kinds of things. And hearing, I think it was a few years ago or maybe a year ago, where ESCOM, for example, had to import skills from Asia. And one looks at the kind of skills that are there in an institution like DNEL. What role can we play? And that's why I was specifically saying just the skills development in the country. Can't we benefit somehow? Can the country benefit somehow from the kind of skills that are there? I don't know, maybe they will say, FET colleges are very far from where they operate. Maybe it may even come as some kind of a corporate social responsibility program. Whether you call the college lecturers there, whether you adopt one FET college, or you have a program for them, some way of assisting. Maybe we can say, the connection is far-fetched. But I'm just saying, there must be a benefit. We're saying, it's a strategic asset. We are not there yet. But I'm just saying, it may just be one of the ways that the community says, indeed, we are benefiting from a body like DNEL.
Yes, Madam Chair, so we are going to have another round. I just want to clear. I have something about the salary, but it might be just out of the scope of what we are talking about, or on the side of it.
Chairperson, yes, for clarity on this bonuses. Chairperson, the variable pay is actually just a glorified name for performance bonus, as I understand it. And it's been said here on page 149, where you discuss this variable pay, that the key performance areas are based on the group's five-pillar strategy. Now, if we look at the presentation on page 10, It is so complicated, you know. Just to mention, the five pillars refer to: one, race, capabilities and productivity. The second one, secure equity business partnerships. Third, focus on growing the commercially viable business. You know, it is so vague and so complicated. What in this? Where are the performances in those pillars? And that is what we can't understand. And this is what we need to explain to our constituency, to the electorate. If they ask us, and there were questions in the beginning about the media reporting, the style of the media reporting, but it is because we failed to understand exactly where are the performances. It is so vague, these pillars, you know, the headings of these pillars, and we will not manage to explain this to the person on the street, to the public out there. And that's why we ask to get clarity on what is this performance is based on. Thank you. How do you measure the real performances? Because from this, I mean, if you take this to the public, they will think it's something from Einstein. They won't understand this. And even me, I fail to understand this because it is so vague. You know, if I tell you I get a performance bonus on secure equity business partnerships, what am I saying? I don't know what I'm saying if I say that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bonuses that you are paid. I will not name the name of the person, neither will I name the name of the department he was intending to go to. But I want to ask whether the retention is only for the group executives or whether it is also for the business unit, because there was an attempt of movement of one CEO of one business unit to become a director general of one department. My question is, would that movement have breached the retention strategy? Are the executives of the business entities also receiving or a participant of retention strategy by way of incentivizing them with bonuses? Is it working if one of them suddenly decides to respecting people's constitutional rights? That I want to underpin that to move anyway. But when I saw that attempt, I asked myself, where is the retention strategy here? Where is the retention bonuses? Is this a breach, or is it only applying to the group level?
Maybe we will respond, but I think it's best just to address the issue about retention bonuses. We don't have retention bonuses in the group. Okay, so I think because it was just top of mind, I think it's best just to sort that out. And then we will now respond to the other questions in the order that it came from Fikile.
The page 149 that you referred to, which lists all the executives, and it's with a total of 12.6 million is a total pay. And then if you look at that against what you got on page 180, which is note number 3, disclosing the director's pay. In terms of the IFRS, we are required to disclose the executive directors. So the number of 10 million in here, we have extracted only to executive directors that we're disclosing on the next page. So it's not necessarily a total of 12, because if you take the 12 together with the variable pay of 5.6, that gives you about 18 million. We're disclosing 10, which is on page 180, and it relates only to executive directors. That's an extraction of the executive directors.
And the executive directors are two. It's myself and Fikile.
Okay, that answers the first one. It's a matter of disclosure, but all the relevant numbers have been duly disclosed. There's a second comment there about the salary increases, you know, being in excess of certain percentages. The salary increase at an overall level was about 4% for last year, was in the press, and there were a whole host of coverage and the unions being unhappy around it. The The only reason why there is an adjustment on executive pay is that a number of executives only joined the company during the course of the year, of last year. So if I will use myself as an example. If my number in these numbers was 1.2 last year, it's purely because I had joined halfway through the financial year. So this year is covering the whole 12 months. So that's why it's actually distorting the numbers. The increases are not at all higher than that was announced. Yeah, those are the 2 points I wanted to cover.
We had this before. Then there must be footnotes to explain that. Because your salary increased from 1.299 to 2.867. Okay, that's what I read. If it's wrong what I read, then you need to explain to me in a footnote. This is over a different period than the annual report date. But you cannot publish a document like this without giving that information to the public. We represent the public. And what I read here, and I can work out the salary increases for each of your other five persons. So what I appeal to you, just correct it and publish it in the correct manner so that we don't have repeatedly wrong information or put a wrong message out to the public.
To respond, there is in fact a footnote. If you look at page 149, because to each person's name, where there are differences, you are referred to when the person has started employment. And these financial statements are prepared in accordance with the PFMA as well, and they have been audited. So the PFMA has a specific requirement on disclosure of these of the director's emoluments, and the auditors also complete not only an IFRS audit that Fikile has referred to, but also a PFMA audit to ensure that our financial statements are prepared according to the PFMA. So to give you an example, with Mr. Mshlonto, point number two, it tells you exactly when he was appointed to the executive committee. And the year end is end of March, so whereas one prepares these financial statements, one then assumes that there is a certain level of financial understanding, and it's prepared in accordance with the PFMA. The other questions? But we take note, if we wish to expand on it, you always have a problem, Chair, about balancing costs in this document as well, which is a challenge one has as well. But to the extent where we can improve disclosure, that's the idea, we get feedback, and to the extent we can accommodate requests, we will do that. Then the next question dealt with the strategic drivers and how that...
Just before you continue, I understand your point. He was appointed the 6th of October 2008. This report covers the period the 1st of April 2009 to 31st of March 2010. What you're saying then, he was from 6th October 2008 until 1st of April 2009. That money that he received was added to the total that you reflect in the table.
Through the chair, under 2009. So if you look at Mr. Morris in 2009, so from the time he joined Danel to the end of March 2009, that is what he has earned. So because he was with us for the entire year in 2010, that was his remuneration. And our average salary increase in that year, because our average salary increase for the year that we're in was 4.8%, the average salary increase. It was not in the double digit or even more. The year we're in right now, Chair, it was 4.8. In the previous year, it was around between 7 and 8%. Patients may have the...
Last year, the group average was 9.8%. For the group, the salary increase for the group, and this year it was 4.8.
Particular individuals that you refer, sorry, Chair. the particular individuals that you refer to did not get a 9.8% increase. They got a lower percentage.
Just on a point of clarity, this fixed remuneration, is that everything that anybody earns, is that a fixed, or is it like a basic and it then gets added on, or is it total cost to company, or I just need to understand that as well, just as a clarification, because now it seems like it is this plus, and it might end up at 20 million rand.
Through the chair, I'm questioning why there is that lack of clarity, or it's this, because I don't think we've indicated that. I think it is total cost to company. And this information that you see in front of you has been audited, so you can rely on the integrity of the information.
We're not questioning the integrity of the auditors or yourself, but you must also understand that we want to understand. So bear with our ignorance and naivety. We depend on you to assist us to understand this, so that we explain on your behalf long after you have left.
Thank you, Chair. And I say that with full respect to the committee members. In terms of the strategic pillars, and the Honourable Member is correct, it's very difficult. So what we do is we've condensed those pillars into key performance indicators in our performance contract, and we call them KPAs, key performance areas, and a big bulk of it, because we're in a turnaround phase and we're focusing on financial improvement, we attach a high weighting on business performance. Because the financial performance then addresses all of those strategic drivers. If we're asking an entity to improve productivity and capability, that needs to come through the financial performance of the entity. If we're asking them to improve operational excellence, increase order cover, all of that comes in there. So in the past year, we gave between a 60 and 70% weighting of a performance contract to financial performance and governance, because that was our other critical area of concern. Then we would attach a 20% weighting, we did that in the past year, to transformation. So as we contract with a particular individual, we will say, this is the level that we expect you to achieve, and if you do achieve it, then that's the weighting you do qualify. And the score can be anything from 1 to 5. 3 meaning a performing to expectation onwards. That's the issue around the strategic drivers and how we then bring it. I think also in terms of the governance around these performance, the variable pay, what we do is all of that is presented to each entity's P&R committee, to each entity's board, and before any payments are made, this is also signed off by the Danel as the investment holding company, their board, after it going to the Danel P&R subcommittee of the board. We also get this information audited by the auditors to see that it ties in with the performance rating of the entity.
Just before we proceed, Talib, we will have to end at 1:15 because the president is going to have a meeting in this venue at 2:00 and they need to re-sweep, re-clean and all those things. I need to see how many questions we are left with, but there was a question of Ngosi that I want to latch on to with the key performance area. The struggling business entities of Dinel, the ones that are bringing the group down in terms of performance, can we also talk to the key performance areas of the executives of those entities and related matters as proof of, can we interrogate the turnaround strategy, including the key performance areas for those entities when we meet in November? So can you go and do a preparatory work to prove to us that there is a relevant turnaround strategy with components of KPAs aligned to the specific nature of problems of those entities, including your broader pillars. But having said this, let's be mindful of the fact that we will have to end at 1:15. Yes,
Can I just check with you, have you massaged the fact that we are supposed to be somewhere at our first?
Yes, I had made a request yesterday about that, to say that we might arrive at one, because I was cognizant of the fact that we cannot abruptly stop a portfolio committee meeting. So if we leave here at 4:00, we'll arrive slightly before one. But if we can end, I didn't want to scuttle questions or to end the meeting abruptly. So just bear with us. If we can stop, if we manage to stop before 4:00, all the better for all of us.
The person, can I check, are we all invited to the Samoa that Godot is referring to?
Yeah.
It does follow.
Chairperson, I must be out of order. So just keep going, guys. I thought in light of the time constraint, let me respond to another question that is at a higher level that I think requires attention that we may have skipped. It was a question in the context of the strategic nature of Danel. What precisely has Danel achieved in the past 10 years that it can brag about? Now, without seeking to take a defensive stance and then try and generate a litany of achievements, one can point to a few specifics. One area, for example, which remains strategically important and even more so today, is in the arena of unmanned aerial vehicles, which Danel has not just on its own but with other aspects of South African defense industry as a particular capability. Indeed, when one uses the term world-class, one does not use it lightly. A capability that is indeed world-class. Now, it was not necessarily started in the past 10 years, but these activities simply improve incrementally over time. And so the issue is that the achievements in the past 10 years have been to maintain and retain and develop further certain areas which one legitimately might referred to as strategic. From the point of view that today they've got a variety of potential applications within and outside of defense, for example, in the security arena where there's a collective high-level project amongst a variety of institutions to look at modalities of monitoring our offshore and our territorial waters as well as our borders using a variety of technologies, including the UAV technologies that have been kept within Danel. Other areas are perhaps, one can give other examples, but there are other areas which are less difficult to spot, less easy to spot, such as optronics. There's an expertise in optronics that has been retained, which made it possible for a leader like Carl Zeiss to say, would like to partner with Danel in optronics and from the Carl Zeiss optronics activity that we spoke about earlier, where again there have been a variety of products which are proving very useful in the security arena, for example, to assist the police with surveillance and so on. So there are particular examples that one can speak to in a bit more detail. Having said that, I believe that the question was being asked in the context of interrogating legitimately what is strategic in the activities that Danel is involved in. And I think that should form part of a higher level interrogation. What are the things that we believe we ought to retain capabilities in as a country? And how much of those things must necessarily be retained in a defense entity that is state-owned? And which ones might, for example, be areas we can form partnerships in with other players, and which areas might be exited because perhaps we don't believe that either they're important anymore or that we as a country should retain expertise in. And that cannot be a position that we take as Danel, as a board or as management in isolation, but in consultation with a variety of
stakeholders, the shareholder environment, if you like. Thank you, Chair.
I would like you to answer Mr. Dikuba's question, and maybe if we have time, keep on another question that will ask us to close the meeting on a good note, and then we part ways, and then the remainder of the questions, we will tally them together, you and I, and we will send them in writing, but the strategic ones we will deal with when we meet in November.
Currently, we, as we indicated earlier, we are collaborating mostly with universities because we did indicate that we find that the last 10 years we didn't have, we had skills depletion. But that is an input that we would like to explore. We haven't specifically dealt with FETs as mentioned, but we have collaborations with universities of technology and other institutions of higher learning.
We want to put it to you that there's no way you can build the artisans base without collaborating with FEC colleges. We want to give you that challenge. We want to give you the challenge of recruiting from rural areas. If you have not done so, demonstrate that in the demographics that you send to us. If not, show us the plan that you will report to us in the next 6 months, next year, midway through the year, your recruitment to attempt to recruit from rural areas.
Teacher.
Any questions that you want to answer?
Okay.
So that other question I want to ask about the renewal is very important, and it's about the consultation fees that are very high, about 200 million for a year. And I wanted just to know if that is as a direct result of the brain drain in the company that people are turning over. And I mean, we have discussed this previously as well, where people resign, but then they come back as consultants, and then they charge exuberant salaries as well. So I just wanted to ask that question. I didn't want to ask that when the director's renovation was on.
Chair, there was a question around the recapitalization and the MTEF process. Maybe from DPE we could get a response on that. Coming in back as consultants, people who resign, we don't bring them in back as consultants. Patience, can you confirm that?
I can confirm that we don't recycle people that have left. I think the consultants, the major areas have been in the DSA environment. And the group FD can maybe give you the top three. Okay.
But it's not
employees.
These are for specific interventions across the group. If you look at the now solved aerostructures we brought in to implement the turnaround plan, we did spend cash on those consultants.
Can we include that in terms of the follow-up question or responses?
That's right. And the amount is 100 million, not 200.
If you take the company and the group together, it's 402 million.
No, that's not. A group is a consolidation of the company. So it's the way it's been read is incorrect. So we either reconcile 98 or we reconcile 100 million. So it's not 200 million. Sure, no, we will respond. You're in a turnaround phase and you do bring in experts. For instance, the A400M. We had to bring in international consultants to work on the design and development work on the A400M. So those costs would be included in there as well. But we will provide you with a breakdown. But just to clarify, the number is not 200 million. But we could give you a breakdown of the 98 million and the 100 million. Okay.
Chairperson,
I'd just like to state that although Dimia has made progress since 2005, the solvency position of the company continues to pose serious challenges. And overall, looking at trading losses barring DSA, those have come down significantly. The biggest risk that the company is faced with is DSA. But although the net equity position is back in the black, Dinel is still overloaded with significant debt levels. And right now, the position of the department is that given the fiscal constraints that South Africa is facing, recapitalization is now not likely a proposition. Dinel needs to focus on improving its operational and financial performance to secure its long-term position. And key around that is DSA, and particularly the A400 contract, which I think we are working with Dinel in finding a resolution to.
You know, I would like to bring this meeting to an end, to thank Dinel for their presentation, to thank the members for their very, I didn't want to mean interrogative, but very engaging questions. I think it was a useful exercise, and we're looking forward to continue this interrogation when we meet in November. And on that note, I would like to bring the meeting to an end and to wish you a safe journey back until we meet. And then let's communicate in the next 5 days in terms of outstanding issues and outstanding questions that need to be answered. Thank you very much.